Welcome to another podcast episode. And once the show gets going on Monday, we'll keep these going in some way. You'll have to give me some time to figure those out. And this won't be the last podcast episode because I intend to wrangle up Ashley and Demetrius and maybe even Philip as well. The holidays have him all locked away at the Apple Store. But we'll do one more podcast as we have been doing this Saturday morning. It's Eric. It's good to have you here about 5 o'clock before we get going with the show tonight on Q105 at 7. Let me welcome in a new guest, a first-time guest, and a new friend who I met, let's see, 24, call it like less than 48 hours ago. Her name is, I don't want to mess your last, Dorothy
Mockensturm.
Got it.
Nailed it.
Dorothy, I was introduced to Dorothy and her group, Good Grief, through a friend of mine, Gene, Gene Dries, who I've worked with and you might have heard on the podcast before. Gene invited me to be a part of Good Grief's, I'm on the marketing committee? Marketing committee? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are you the ED, the executive director?
Yeah, my title is actually managing director, but interchangeable, yes.
Got it. Okay, so Dorothy and I was in this meeting yesterday, and what you do intersects greatly with all my mental health advocacy, mm-hmm. and I've heard of you guys before. I don't know how, and I don't know how our paths had not crossed before, yeah. But I wanted to have you in to talk about Good Grief, because there's no one that I know of who's not suffered a loss of some kind. And I'm guessing, does Good Grief, my first question, does Good Grief, and I know we're starting in the middle here, does Good Grief go beyond like the loss of a loved one? I mean, there's many forms of grief, like a job loss?
Right. Career? No, actually, okay. Our program focuses on grief because of a death.
Got it. Okay.
And also the children. We're there to support the children. We also happen to support the adults that care for them, but the focus is on childhood grief.
Okay, there we go. So let's back up.
Sure.
What's Good Grief?
Well, we provide peer support groups for children and teens who've had a death impact their lives. So it's not counseling or therapy. It is a group of volunteers. We have a small staff, but mostly we're volunteer run, who go through a training program that we put on. And they are, you know, willing to sort of set aside their lives to come every other week and be with kids, to just sort of be fully present while kids experience and express what it is they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really sort of setting the stage, creating a space and time for kids to be with other kids who have had like experiences. You know, it's difficult to be the kid in school whose mom died.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and death is weird, and grief is weird, and even as fully formed adults, we often have trouble talking about it and finding ways to be supportive. And that's especially true with children. And, you know, we know from research that the risk factors that sort of come with unaddressed childhood grief can be pretty serious and can follow them well into adulthood. You know, just as simple as a higher likelihood of having trouble with anxiety and depression, but there's also an increased risk of substance abuse, and even those kids are at a higher risk of suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, even it's not a foregone conclusion that if you experience the trauma of the death of somebody you love as a child, you're, you know, not going to be a productive adult, but the risk factors are real. So
sure.
Our program is helping kids find their way to positive coping skills, so that, I mean, we're very, very plain about, and kids know this, that we can't fix it.
Right.
We can't take this away. But we can help them find ways to adjust to this new life that no longer has that person in it.
What are some of the coping skills that you guys try to relay in these peer sessions? Because I would think when I hear coping skills, I think that that's something that like counseling and therapists should be working on. And you guys augment that?
Yeah, I guess what I should say that it's more about, because grief and really sort of that experience is unique to the individual.
Yeah.
So what works for you as a coping skill may not work for me.
Yep.
But the idea is that, you know, by setting the space and time for it, kids then won't be relying on things like, you know, numbing the pain, and whether that's through substance abuse or, you know, just checking out and, you know, being, you know, not, what do I want to say, with their video games or something, just not being a part of life because life is difficult and confusing now. So rather than saying, we say, okay, learn how to do this, it's more about letting them express what they're feeling so that those messages that they're telling themselves based on the world around them are grounded in their reality rather than confusion because of what life looks like right now.
Right.
I mean, we all tell ourselves things about ourselves based on the world around us. And when the bottom is dropped out, the message can be that, you know, I'm less than or different than now because this thing has happened. A thing that was not of my choosing and I had absolutely no control over.
How, when it comes to the sessions and the groups and the activities, is this something that they're counseling? Do you ever get kids that don't have counseling and therapy?
Yeah.
They just jump right to you?
Yes.
Okay.
Because our services are free.
Right.
Nobody ever has to pay. And for some families, we are probably the only resource they have.
Yeah.
But a lot of our families do both. And we would never say one is better than the other.
Sure.
But for children especially, a one-on-one counseling mode sort of, it precludes that the child has the vocabulary to explain how they're feeling.
Yeah.
And, you know, some kids do, but typically that's not true.
Many adults cannot express what's going on in their head, and we have a hard time getting the correct and accurate diagnoses. So knowing is one of the things that maybe you preach, or when someone comes to you who chooses not to do counseling for one reason or another, is it acceptance? Like, this is the reality now, and we're,
you know, I think, and it's kind of a hard concept if you haven't been through it, but I think it's about learning to live with opposing viewpoints. So, like in my case, my mom died when I was quite young.
Mm-hmm. Is that what got you involved in Good Grief?
It did. I was, you know, the quick answer to that is they were looking for a managing director when I was looking for a job. But
got
as
it.
Soon as I'd heard about it, I couldn't get my hand up fast
sure.
enough. But had often thought as an adult, I wonder how my family story would have played out differently if we'd had the right kind of support at the right time, which
right.
we didn't. Getting back to that opposing viewpoints, in my case, am I glad that my mother died? Absolutely not. Would I be where I am today if she hadn't? You know, likely not. And am I happy where I am now? Yes. So while it takes a roller coaster to get from one to the other, you know, at some point when you're dealing with grief, it stops being this thing that happened to you
mm-hmm.
and it becomes part of who you are.
Yeah.
And then you sort of learn to make peace with that. And that process is different for everybody. And for some, you know, it takes one-on-one counseling. It takes family therapy. It takes, and what we believe is that for everybody, a caring and accepting place like Good Grief is going to help in that.
What's like the icebreaker when someone comes to you? Obviously, it's a very complicated topic, and I guess if you're dealing with, how young are some of the kids that you work with?
We work with kids from 4
okay.
to young adults.
And
so.
Some kids who are probably 4, 5, 6 can't wrap their head around the concept.
Right.
Like, I remember when I was a little boy, and I think it was my grandfather died when I was very young. And I think when I was old enough to recognize he wasn't there, but he would be talked about, and I don't remember him at all. My grandmother, his wife was still alive.
Mm.
We'll call her Grammy Bale because that's her name. But she had a dog, Candy, and Candy died.
Mm.
And then my mom would tell me that Candy went with Grandpa Paul. And I was like, okay, I just assumed that they went to this place where death happened. And I had no idea of the concept of like funerals and burying and and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you work through that with a young child?
Right. So we know that kids process and understand death differently depending on their age.
Okay, yeah.
So a 4 or 5 year old is doesn't really have a concept of permanence.
Yeah.
I mean, you get that Candy and Grandpa weren't there anymore, but like you just said, where is this place that you're talking about? And I'm glad you brought that up because we're actually very intentional about the words that we use. So we don't say things like passed away or lost.
Or just
we
gaunt, say more nebulous things. Oh, okay.
Died.
Oh, okay.
Right. And a lot of us kind of fall back on the things that our the way our family talked about it. So, and if you have sort of a faith-based approach to this, you might say things like, well, you know, he's in a better place, or aren't you glad he can watch over you from heaven? And to a child that's 4, 5, 6, 7, that isn't a comforting thought. It's very confusing because that concept of, well, if he's someplace where he can see me, why can't I see him?
Yeah.
And if you know this, if you know where he is, take me there.
Right.
Because that's where I want to be.
So with kids that are like 4, 5, 6 and don't grasp that, you say they're dead?
Well, I mean, it's we, yes.
Okay.
I mean, but it's not some, the way we approach it is we meet the children wherever they are.
Right.
So if, and kids are actually pretty matter of fact about this. It's usually the adults in the equation that are showing emotion. Kids are still wrapping their heads around what this means.
Right.
So while I'm not saying they don't show any emotion, typically when we see them, they're kind of matter of fact about it.
Yeah, the kids say the darndest things, right?
Exactly. And it's their reality now.
And if this is like a sketchy area, we don't have to belabor it, but does you ever have issues with like religion intersecting and creating, I guess, problems to get the kids or whoever past the grief?
Well, I wouldn't say it causes problems.
Complications?
It in that process of meeting a child where they are, I'd say the complications actually come more from like the adults in the equation, because one of the things that we train the volunteers that facilitate these groups, and as a caring adult, we want to fix things.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to see a kid in pain. So we offer these platitudes. And as I said, we often fall back on those things that we said as a child or learned, you know, at our parents' knee or whatever. So the complication is typically not with a child. I think, I don't want to say that kids don't have faith, because I believe they do, but it comes from a very pure and individual sort of sense of themselves.
And they learn it from their parents if they go to
that
places
sort of
worship.
That dogmatic kind of rule-based faith,
mm-hmm.
I don't think comes naturally to children.
No, I mean, we are what we learn, right?
Right,
and
right.
You don't like come out of the womb and go, I am a nice Jewish boy. You
have exactly.
No idea what that is.
Exactly.
So, okay, we didn't have to spend a whole lot of time with it.
Right.
I just know that like different religions think different things, and anytime somebody finds out I'm Jewish, especially in this area with like 7 Jewish people, they're
right?
Like, do Jews not believe in heaven? I'm like, I'm the wrong Jewish person to ask that. I have no idea. In fact, one of the things that I talk about when I'm in the right audience and when I talk about suicide, mm-hmm. one of the things that I've told myself in the throes of my depression was, while it's an escape from the hopelessness and the pain, I don't know where I'm going. And nobody does for that matter.
Right.
It could be worse, but I don't know where it is. So, to the hell and all that stuff, I just don't know. I would hate to think that like maybe I am reincarnated into a tree. That would be very boring and immobile and inert. What are some of the activities that you guys do to help the kids?
Well, so our program director puts together a program night, and each program night begins with some sort of a experiential task or an art-based activity that is actually more about beginning a conversation about some aspect of grief. So, for example, one of the things they did that was really popular, Shayna, our program director, got a hold of a bunch of old phone books, which was not easy to do.
I mean, probably pretty easy.
There weren't any at my house, I can tell you. And they just sort of tore those phone books up and talked about the anger. So it was this destructive yet perfectly safe way of expressing anger. Anger at the situation, anger at what it feels like to go back to school and not having anybody understand, anger at, you know, the fact that this person isn't there anymore and I'm going to have to learn how to drive and my dad's not going to be the one to teach me. So that's just an example. And sometimes the kids, you know, want to go in a completely different direction. So we have lots of opportunities, lots of things in each one of the group rooms so that the kids, you know, if they don't feel like tearing up a phone book, then they can, you know, play with the kinetic sand. And it's really more about conversation and self-expression. While the activities are a part of every night, there's room for other things.
Sure. We colloquially hear about the stages of grief.
Right.
Is any of that, is the truth in it? What is that? Because people were probably familiar with the phrase.
It actually had its beginning. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who wrote a book, I don't even know when it was, but it was called On Death and Dying. I think I have that right. And she sort of identified these five stages of grief. And they were actually meant to be sort of more clinically, helpful.
Mm-hmm.
The problem I have with them is that they sort of indicate that there is somehow a finish line to all this.
Right.
Like, if I can just make it through to that fifth stage, I'm good. And anybody that's been through it knows it's not like that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't progress in a linear fashion. And you can think that I thought I dealt with that. I thought I was through this. And then it comes roaring back for whatever reason. So I think it's helpful if you approach this in a purely intellectual sort of way, but emotionally, I think that the message of those five stages of grief can be kind of confusing.
Sounds like you're calling BS, which I'm totally fine with.
Yeah, a little bit.
No, I get it, because it's individualized. Everyone reacts differently. I don't want to make this about me, but I'll give you my example, and if you can tell me if you've ever encountered... So, my brother and I reacted very differently to my mother's death. My mom died 3.5 years ago.
Okay.
She was like 68, 69.
Yeah.
And he had lived at home with her. So he watched her. She got diagnosed. She was sick for a long time. Epstein-Barr, blah, blah, blah. And then in January of 15, she got a diagnosis of lung cancer. And when you get a lung cancer diagnosis, you have like 6 months. It's usually stage four. And actually, right after she passed away, they released some very potent immunotherapies for lung cancer that my mom couldn't make the trial for because of certain things. But she was gone 6 months later. So my brother, being at home, watched her erosion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very black and white. In a lot of ways and pragmatic, and I was just waiting for this day because I watched my mom, not take care of herself, not eat right, not exercise, and smoke forever. I remember hiding or throwing away my mom's cigarettes because I didn't like it, but I was very black and white about it. In fact, when I was home, when she went to hospice, and it was home hospice, I remember reading. I was like, "How does someone die?" Like, I wasn't trying, I knew she was going to die. It was a matter of when. So I wanted to read how. And I read up on things like the death rattle. Like, are you familiar with that?
Oh, yeah.
Where someone, like, the all the chemicals in their body, it goes away. And I'm not talking about, like, pooping yourself when you die.
Right.
But all that stuff. Like, I was scientifically diving in. Mm-hmm. And my brother was deeply emotional about it because he was close to her.
You're very different people, I would say.
Absolutely. Right. And I remember, I think it was 3 years ago, a friend of mine had gotten cancer. I forget what kind, but I made a Facebook post, and I thought, I didn't think that it would come across my brother, and he was very upset by it because I was so black and white about my mom's death, and it affected him differently. And I'm guessing you probably don't come across people like me very much, where, pragmatic about it.
I don't know know that that's true. But the important thing is that if that is how you a child approaches it or feels about it, that that's okay.
Yeah.
Because we see it even like what you just described in SIB groups. You know, you... So your sort of the way you would approach her death was very different than his. I'm assuming that the way you approached the grief associated with that after her death is very different than the way he did it.
I mean, I bring this up for you to analyze because no one ever has, not my therapist or anything. And I remember saying on the air on the show back then, as my mom was dying amid her cancer, I was like, I have no emotions about this. I have no grief. I have no reconciliation. I have nothing. I mean, this is just me, like, you smoke a lot, you get cancer, you die. Like, I processed it like that. And some people were pissed off. They're like, you can't talk about your mom like that. And I get that because most people are deeply emotional.
Right.
But I had no grief. Zero. None. Not. And maybe it affected me in other... The grief manifested itself in... unconventional ways, but I had none because I just processed it like 1 + 1 = 2. So,
I would suggest that you didn't. you are grieving because maybe it looks very different than what you expected it to look like. But in your way, you are grieving the death of your mother. Now, if it's not hugely emotional, or you're not weeping about it, or you don't miss her every day. That's fine.
Right.
It doesn't mean you're not grieving.
So how is my grief manifesting itself?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure, but it is something that you very relatively freely share about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
This is part of your reality now, is that your mother has died. And I suspect that you're still kind of wrapping your head around it.
Not at all.
No?
No, nothing. Nothing. Nothing at all. I mean,
interesting.
Exactly.
So it's been 3 years?
Yeah. I have, and I don't.
Were you particularly close with her?
No. I love my mom.
Sure.
But
she wasn't somebody you would have called and said, hey, mom, this happened today.
Here's my mom, and now if my dad like died tomorrow, I'd be a mess. I am my father's son. My mom was like, I like to say it, very secretarial. My mom would always offer to write out my bills and send me coupons. And my mom was amiable and friendly. But I could never deeply, emotionally, or intellectually engage my mom.
Gotcha.
And those are touchstones for me. Mm-hmm. Whenever, you know, I was going sideways, it was always a conversation with my dad, never my mom. Doesn't mean I love her less. I just loved her differently than my dad. And those are important for me. The same thing with like relationships. If if I'm attracted to someone, if we go in and we're not intellectually engaged and emotionally engaged, and we can talk about these big high topics, like I just zone out.
So, yeah.
And I just go back to black and white a bit about it.
Well, I think it probably speaks more to the relationship before she died.
Yeah.
I was the youngest of six. And actually, all three of my brothers and one of my sisters have died.
Oh, my God.
And I just recently got into a conversation with the surviving sister about all of that. And, you know, I approach all of that because of my mother's death. This is like total, you know, total openness here.
Yeah.
I didn't live with my family since I was 8 years old.
Oh, wow.
I didn't have a relationship with my brothers and sisters from that moment. So as an adult, when they died, and it was over the span of, you know, 10 years, I had a very different reaction to it than my sister. And that has been hard for her to understand.
Mm.
And it sounds like when I say to her, you know, well, we weren't a part of each other's daily lives, my fear is that that sounds like a cop out,
right?
And that I was really just sort of, I'm not sure. I mean, I don't, I my fear is that it looked like I just wasn't going to go out of my way for them.
Right. But the truth is your emotions were different from them because you hadn't been around for a long time.
I knew them as a child.
Yeah.
I didn't know them as an adult.
So you can kind of, to me,
I can relate.
Yeah. Sympathy and empathy to me are often interchangeable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doing this and being so close to death, have you become kind of pragmatic like I am?
No.
Okay.
I haven't.
Okay. Let me use another word. Are you able to more skillfully compartmentalize than most people?
I must be. But I will tell you that, you know, the sort of my sense of gravity is much different on a Monday than it is on a Friday afternoon. And just because I think it's because of my personal experience. Mm-hmm. So I empathy, as you mentioned it, I identify with these kids.
Right.
And so the exciting part about it is that I know we're doing something that's helpful.
Yeah.
But it's a lot.
Yeah, for sure. It's a lot for adults. I mean, like I mentioned to you yesterday, and I mentioned it yesterday, last night on the show, when it comes to mental health, depression, bipolar, schizophrenia, like, it's hard to put our thumb on these things because, you know, as I often say, you can't x-ray it and go, you have a broken leg. But I will guarantee that everyone that you encounter in the program has some kind of mental health issue, because there can be nothing more emotionally impactful or devastating as the loss of a loved one.
Right. It is definitely a trauma. And we know that, you know, that whole saying is that people that interact with kids, and if they're exhibiting some sort of negative behavior, instead of saying what's wrong with you, the question should be what happened to you.
Yeah.
And you know, the death of a parent or a sibling is certainly one of those things. You don't outgrow this. You don't get over it. You learn how to operate in life now that this is your reality.
And the activities that you, let's go into some of the specifics. Did I see Tuesdays and Thursdays?
Yes, every other Tuesday and every other Thursday.
Okay. And the volunteers that orchestrate these programs, you said they go through a training program. Are they often people who have been through good grief, or what's often their connection?
You know, usually they are attracted to us because of, often, I shouldn't say usually, often they are attracted to our mission because of their own story.
Yeah.
They had someone die as a child, or, you know, it's interesting because I have two grown daughters, and I'm sure that the way I raise them is different because of my experience. Mm-hmm. So, like, I didn't talk about my childhood much when they were growing up because it seemed very, very dark and sad and hard to explain. And I think they kind of thought I had this sort of mysterious background kind of thing. That
Mom works in the CIA.
I think she was a gypsy, maybe. I'm not sure. But so, yeah, I think that's why they sort of raise their hand and say, yeah, I want to be part of this, because like me, they were like, I wish something like this had been around when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But that's not true for everybody. Some of them are teachers or other, you know, other involved some other way with education. We have some retired nurses. We have, you know, it's really kind of runs the gamut. I would say most of them do not have any sort of counseling or therapy background. And that actually, this can be kind of difficult for people that do, because we're not doing counseling or therapy. We're not. I mean, you go to a therapist with a problem. The idea is that they're going to fix you.
And they go down the list and the protocols.
Right. Let's try this. Well, grief isn't like that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you get to the therapist, and like I spent a lot of time in my 20s and 30s dealing with some pretty bad anxiety. So that's what I thought was the problem.
Right.
Was the anxiety. The case can be made that it was really about the death of my mother.
Grief and depression.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I have learned as I've delved deeper into this, that depression and anxiety are interlocked, and they often can, I feel like depression is the source, and it spits out a lot of the other things that people get maybe diagnosed with, because they work evilly together, hand in hand. I'm going to guess that you don't do as much interaction with the kids as some of, like, your program manager does. Okay, because I was going to say, you mentioned Monday to Friday. I was going to wonder again, not that you're any kind of harbinger of death or that you've accepted it, but you're around it a lot. And I guess it would weigh more on someone like Shayna.
Yeah, I think so. And we talk about, you know, she and I spend a lot of time talking about sort of the events of the week. And there's lots of exciting and fun things,
right,
too. I mean, it's not just a doom and gloom all the time.
Sure,
and,
sure.
And, you know, when you're there with the kids, it's just like being in any other group of kids.
Right.
I mean, they're having fun and they're interacting with one another in you know, in a upbeat sort of way. So it's more about sort of hearing as families come to us and ask about information about our program. It's sort of hearing and processing their stories.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was just wondering, because I'm a big advocate of even people who are in the profession, like, need to. That's a lot to take in, and like everybody should talk to somebody. And
right.
If you're taking all that emotional weight home with you on an evening or on a Friday, like, you got to have an outlet or something.
Yeah.
You got to be able to breathe. Cause
right. And it really is kind of a processing thing where it's, you know, it would be much harder if we didn't have some sort of help to offer.
Mm-hmm.
But we do. And mm-hmm. I know that it helps. And I know that we're helping the adults
for
as
sure.
well. I think sometimes that surprises the adults, that the initial thought is that they're coming there for their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And the adult groups happen at the same time that the kids groups are going on. And adults are not required to take part in the adult support groups, but it's encouraged. And they do have to stay on our premise while the kids are there. And I've heard a couple of the adults afterwards kind of say, after they've decided that they're ready to close from the program, that they were surprised that it was as much support for them as it was for the kids.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to see when you're in that cloud of your own grief. It masks and twists your reality.
Right, it really does.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, and research shows that it's better for kids. Like, kids can be very protective of the adults around them for a lot of different reasons. But, you know, if I mention her name and every time I do, you cry, I learn pretty quickly that it's not okay to mention her name.
Right.
So if the kids know that the adults have somebody to talk to and are getting support from, it takes, they do better, because
yeah.
then they can focus on their own thing because they know that the adults in the equation are getting some support.
Yeah.
That's really what it's all about.
Unless I am overlooking some obvious questions that I need to ask you, I'll wrap up with, I know we just passed the breakfast, but do you have any other fundraising efforts or events or walks or anything else that we can put on a calendar that you guys work on throughout the year?
Yeah, no, we will be having something in the spring. I'm not sure exactly that date, and I will ask that maybe when we do set that date, you would let
absolutely.
Us have that conversation again. But I could say that we are always in need of financial contributions. But there's lots of ways you can support Good Grief as a volunteer, and there are, you know, levels of that, so that if you know, the commitment of the training and a year's worth of program is more than what a person could do right now, there are sort of lesser levels
mm-hmm.
That we'd be happy to talk to anybody about. And then just also sharing the information with people that they know.
Yeah.
If they know of a family where a death has happened, if they've said, you know, have you thought about calling Good Grief?
And open to everybody that can
yes.
hear our, like, Northwest Ohio,
yes.
South, all of it, right?
Well, Northwest Ohio, we are the okay. only standalone 501c3 nonprofit in Northwest Ohio with children's grief as our focus.
Excellent. Thank you for taking a couple of minutes.
Thank you.
Seen a lot of you in the last day.
Yeah.
So that totally, keep hitting me on email.
We're new best friends.
There you go. There you go. Good to meet you. Thanks for taking some time to come
you.
Chat.
Thanks for the offer.
This has been a Cumulus Media and Q105 collaboration. Three unicorns were harmed and lost their rainbows and horns in the production process. We use cookies for various purposes, like eating, and flavor for protein shakes. And you have agreed to this and all other secret policies by enjoying the preceding audio content, which we highly encourage you to #subscribe and share. You can click here for all other legal crap. And now hit skip intro to go to the next podcast. Just kidding. It's the See More Episodes option in your app. Q105.